We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Slop them up. Celtics lose their first game of the season to the Minnesota Timberwolves, 114-109. That and more coming up for you here on Green with Envy. What up, what up, what up? Welcome into another edition of Green with Envy. As always, it's your boy Will Weir checking in. How you doing? How you living? Joining me to recap the first Celtic loss of the season, an OT defeat to the Minnesota Timberwolves on the road, 114-109. It's my best friend, co-host, and the coach of our podcast, the one and only Greg Menakis. How you doing, man?
Time to split up the Jays. Porzingis is overrated. Trade them all.
72 Dolphins popping champagne. There will be no team, shockingly, no team in the NBA that goes undefeated for this season. An interesting game, man. So
yeah, it was a fun one, though.
Yeah, we were talking about it before we started recording. Not the, you know, most crisp game that I would ever, you know, show to somebody as, hey, this is the, you know, best example of NBA basketball, but a really fun game, a really fun, flawed game. Right? Like it was a game where both teams kind of had their moment, showed why both teams are obviously, I mean, I just tweeted this a minute ago, are the T-Wolves the giant slayers of the NBA 2-0 against the Nuggets and Celtics after everyone's kind of putting them at the top of their power rankings? But both teams had their stars out, stars are making plays, and, you know, we'll get into it here in just a second, but this felt like kind of like the Ant Edwards game right now.
Yeah, Ant was awesome. He had his own struggles at times, you know, particularly struggling against those double teams as Scal and our guy Drew were talking about on the broadcast. You know, it was cool seeing Edwards go up against Tatum and Brown. The storyline of Brown being Edwards' mentor, it's just something I just really like to see, guys that can get up for those competitive matchups, because you always hear like the old heads talk about like, I would never be friends with my opponent, and like blah 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 blah, like you can still be competitive with your brothers. And I think that's what this game showed us. It was fun competition throughout. I know we're going to talk about Karl Towns at some point on this podcast. We'll save that for a little bit.
That'll be fun. This podcast will not be all fun for all Celtics fans. The part where we talk about Karl Anthony Towns will be fun.
I cannot wait.
Stick around for that. But before we get into the morning box score, just funny, something that you said right there stuck out to me, because as I was watching towards the end of the game, there was a point where Ant and JB, where you could tell like it was in overtime, and you could see them kind of smiling, but they're just being competitive, right? Kind of going back and forth. And everything you just said crossed my mind. There's some fucking old curmudgeon out there like, this would never happen in the 80s. Look, it's like, yeah, these two dudes from rural Georgia grew up together, like, you know, mentor mentee. This is basically the less talked about Brad Beal Jason Tatum relationship.
Yeah.
Like it's very similar to that. So I don't know, but it was just funny you saying that. I had that exact thought in my mind watching it. It was when the Celtics were getting ready for an inbound, you know, down five with about a minute to go or so. So, you know, with that, let's get into it. Let's talk about this game here. So let's cue up the morning box score. The Minnesota Timberwolves take down the Boston Celtics for the first time this year, 114 to 109. We'll start with the T-Wolves. Mentioned at the top, this was the Anthony Edwards game, 15 of 25 from the field, 38 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 assists for Ant Edwards. Obviously, he's an ascending superstar in this league. Not quite there yet, but he's getting to that precipice of getting himself into that conversation. Jaden McDaniels, 8 of 18 from the field, 4 of 9 from 3, most importantly, 20 points on the night for him, 14 points and 12 rebounds for Rudy Gobert, as well as getting dunked on by Jaylen Brown in this game. We'll talk about that. Karl Anthony Towns, let's see, where was he at? 7 points. Well, where was he is actually probably a very good way to start this Karl Anthony Towns stat line. 7 points for him tonight. Obviously, in a ton of foul trouble, 10 rebounds, fouled out of the game early on in the fourth, midway through the fourth. And then 14 points for Naz Reid off the bench, who, of course, Greg and I are big fans of, along with Scales, we found out during the broadcast. Let's go on over to the Celtics here. And the Celtics were good, just not good enough on this night here. 32 points for Jason Tatum. Did have six turnovers, 32 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 5 steals, 12 of 22 from the field. Jaylen Brown, 10 of 21 from the field, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 26 points overall for him. Kind of a rough night shooting for some of the new guys. Kristaps Porzingis, 5 of 14. Drew Holiday, 4 of 16, although they did have moments in other ways. But for the Celtics, just not enough. They fall tonight 114 to 109. You know, Greg, I mentioned at the top, this was a fun game, not a clean game. Nearly 40 turnovers between the two teams. 39 falling just short of that mark. But, you know, when you look at this game, it's the first time the Celtics just kind of felt like they didn't always have, you know, everything necessarily organized the way they wanted to, right? And part of that is a little bit of Minnesota, right? Minnesota, as we're going to talk about, without Karl Anthony Towns, I think the team is just so much better without Karl Anthony Towns. It just makes so much more sense. Their defense, their offense, all of it feels so much more connected. But for the Celtics' perspective here, you know, where do you think that this game was lost?
I guess late game execution. You know, I think Joe did a really good job coaching tonight. I probably would have called a timeout during overtime just to figure out
that 110-105
when
Ant had the crowd really locked in and you didn't feel organized, right? That was one of the few times that I felt like, you know, I felt, me and you were texting about this, I thought Joe was great tonight for the most part.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Know, I think it's a solid A-minus game. Got to be the shades. You know, who do you think Joe looks like with the shades, by the way? Or what do you, what's your comparison?
I don't really have a comparison. I just think he looks cool.
I saw on Twitter, someone put him in an Iron Man suit where Tony Stark has like the tinted glasses, but they made the Iron Man suit green. I can't get that out of my mind. That feels where it is. But, you know, going back to what you were saying, that 110-105, not calling timeout, that felt like one of the few blemishes on Joe's report card for this game.
Yeah, but then at the same time, you know, they played through it. They got it to one possession game. We had a chance to tie the game. And then, you know, I forget what exactly happened. Plays are kind of running all together in my head. But the play that's standing out to me is the last three-pointer that we threw up there down 5. With
the look from Hauser on the out-of-bounds play that just never really developed.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really understand why we rushed that three-pointer. I know we wanted a three-pointer, but why was Hauser throwing up a prayer with 12 seconds left on the clock? It didn't really make any sense. There were a couple times, you know, the Horford play where he kind of mishandled and slipped out of bounds. I thought that late-game execution, it's tough to execute offense when you have perimeter players that are going to get into the ball the way that the Minnesota Timberwolves do, knowing that they have Rudy Gobert on the back line. Jaden McDaniels was really a pest on the defensive end. I thought Tatum and Brown handled the pressure about as well as they could, but at the same time, that pressure definitely caused them to have some turnovers. Drew Holiday, you know, he had some really big moments on the boards, especially. I think he finished with 11 rebounds.
11 boards. Big board night for Drew Holiday.
Right, and he played great defense on Towns, which we'll talk about here in a second. But, you know, Drew, he had that one big turnover where he tried to drive the lane. Conley got his hand in there, knocked it off him out of bounds. Like, those were the moments in which it felt like Mazzulla probably could have called a timeout to set something up. You heard Scal clamoring to get Kristaps in the action. You know, when you have Chris, I felt like the Celtics forgot they had Kristaps on the court.
It was weird.
Yeah, it was very weird at the end of the game. Like, I thought Gobert was the best I've seen him in a long time. I thought he played great defense on Porzingis, but we didn't involve him in the action enough. We didn't get Porzingis up, high pick and roll. We were running that double drag.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about, because we left the opening, because really, you know, it's been a couple of games and the Celtics really had, you know, a tight game. Brooklyn, like, it was going back and forth, but it never really felt like as much of a threat as obviously this game. But you look back at the first two games the Celtics played, and they went right down to the wire. And especially in the New York game, which was the first game of the season, a heavy dose of JT and KP in that two-man game that left us really excited. Like, man, everybody's so excited for Dame and Giannis. And it feels like we haven't really seen as much of it over, you know, especially down the stretch tonight. We didn't see it at all, really, that I can think of off the top of my head. And I think that's, for me, what I was looking for is maybe something to that extent that you would see, but just never really got that type of look.
Well, I think part of it was Tatum didn't want to bring the ball up against McDaniel's pressure. He was giving the ball to Holiday, and then they were trying to force switches with a three-man game involving the Jays and Holiday. So they were trying to get some sort of switch happening there, running like double drag and screen for screener actions. But it's just really hard to get McDaniel's off of Tatum. And there was so much, you know, Gobert did a really good job on Porzingis throughout the night. So
yeah,
I understand why they were a little bit hesitant with so much ball pressure happening to put Porzingis in situations in which he'd have to make a play. Because I felt like, you know, he wasn't handling the ball the cleanest on the night. But I would have liked to have seen them go to the Tatum and Porzingis pick and pop a couple of times down the stretch, just to see if we could at least involve Rudy Gobert in the action, one, and then two, you know, maybe get Porzingis an open three, because I think he had 15 points in the first half, 5 points in the second half. He kind of disappeared in the second half. It seemed like the Celtics forgot he was there.
Yeah, and it felt like early on in the game, you know, they made it a point of emphasis to get KP some looks from three, just with the intention of you know, dragging Rudy Gobert away from the basket. And it was when KP was, you know, in the lane or, you know, below the free throw lines, when Rudy Gobert was able to really handle him pretty well. Or if KP tried to drive, he did a good job staying down, didn't really bite on a lot of the pump fakes that KP was going for. But it felt like there was some opportunities that the Celtics could have used to kind of penetrate and then kick back out to Kristaps Porzingis to get him those looks, to get him in rhythm more. And it just wasn't there. They tried it a few times with some two-man game with him and Jaylen Brown in the third quarter, I think it was, maybe second or third quarter, that didn't quite come to fruition. But ultimately, you know, I think I just look at this game, and like we said, it was back and forth. Minnesota might be pretty good. Like, I think, you know, there's a discussion to be had of them being better than, like, for a while in the offseason, it felt like the most overhyped five game playoff loss of all time. Like, oh my God, they played the Nuggets kind of close for five games, right, and won one. But, you know, they are showing a little bit more proof of concept, and it certainly helps when you have Ant Edwards going Superman. And I think a little bit of tonight's game is, you know, the Celtics can't have everything go their way every single night. Yeah. Obviously, no Derek White, still out, you know, after the birth of his child. And so tonight, you know, you had bad shooting nights from Kristaps Porzingis and Drew Holiday. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum had good games. Anthony Edwards had a great game. And that was kind of the difference, was Anthony Edwards just being really, really special and your guys just being good. And they had a guy that's approaching that level of, you know, I mean, as we always talk about, there's different tiers of players in the NBA. You know, I think tonight's a night that I've been trying to hold out, that I think Jaylen Brown and Ant are a little bit closer than people say. It's above that level of Jaylen Brown. It's seeming like it's going to be here going forward. I knew it was trending that way, but I think now it might be that time where maybe Ant has kind of surpassed that. And he just had a really special game. And then, like you talked about, they're supporting guys. You know, Mike Conley is maybe one of the best players I've seen at picking his spots. Just kind of knowing the moment, right? Like, yeah. Mike Conley, he only had 8 points tonight, but it felt like out of the shots he hit, they were all very important runners in the lane, the pull-up three towards the end. Like, he knows his role and where he's supposed to be and what he's doing. Naz Reid, a guy that we both love, Jaden McDaniels. Like, this is a team with some real players, and, you know, it just wasn't the Celtics night tonight. I don't really have any, you know, glaring takeaways, I think, from this type of loss.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and I want to push back a little bit on the Tatum and Brown were just good in this game and Ant was great. I thought Ant had moments of being special, but I thought Jaylen arguably had the best game of anybody on the court. You know, Edwards, I think, was the most special, and I think his special moments are just so goddamn loud, and obviously had the best stat line at the end of the day. But I was really impressed with how Jaylen played throughout the night. I thought he played great defense. He gave Edwards some problems. Edwards did not want to go at Jaylen at all. Most of Edwards's work was done against other people. Jaylen had a great floor game. He had those three turnovers, but his four assists were pretty high level assists. He's crashing the glass, hitting some three pointers, you know, 3 for 8 from three. He missed a couple big ones in the fourth quarter, but I was really impressed with Jaylen throughout the night.
Tatum, I love the look he got at the end of the game to win it. That was a great look. Just didn't make it, but that was a great look.
Very hard to shake Jaden McDaniels like that. And he left him like in a whole nother universe. Wide open three, just couldn't knock it down. You know, if Jaylen hits that shot, then we're walking out of this game like extolling Jaylen Brown as being the best player on the court. At the end of the day, best player on the court has to go to Anthony Edwards because he had the best stat line. His team won the game. He made the plays down the stretch. But Tatum, I thought Tatum also had moments of being special. 5 steals. He didn't board up. I didn't bet the Tatum over on rebounds tonight. I didn't think this
there
was
going to be a big. You had a premonition.
Tonight. I did, man. I just didn't think it was the right matchup for him to get boards.
That's fair. It's a big team. Really big Timberwolves team.
But the last thing, man, when you're talking about the role players on the T-Wolves, man, Peyton Pritchard's got to do something. That was one of my bigger takeaways.
Yeah, let's talk about him for a second. I think this is worthy of it. And you know, this is another night where, you know, Hauser ends up getting 11 points. Luke chipped in with 5. And, Luke was solid. I do think even for Hauser, he took a while to get going. He hit those couple of shots late, which really kind of saved it for him and for the bench with some of their production. But with Peyton Pritchard, man, he's just got to find a way to start knocking down some shots. But I do think, I mean, he had 6 rebounds and 3 assists in 20 minutes. Like, he's finding ways to contribute. But say that again.
He was terrible tonight.
Tell me more, because I actually, other than him missing shots, I didn't think he was terrible. I just think he wasn't making shots. And it's, you know, his defense is going to be what it is for his size. But, you know, I didn't think he was terrible. Tell me more why you thought he was so bad tonight.
Yeah, I think the Peyton Pritchard crashing the glass is cool. You know, he's definitely pesky, and that's why I like Pritchard, is that he's always he has a really good nose for the ball. But Peyton Pritchard's not on the court to just be a pesky offensive rebounder. Peyton Pritchard's on the court to space the floor.
He's not TJ McConnell.
Exactly. To shoot open threes, there was this one play. My brother and I were texting back and forth about it. Pritchard's in his own head right now, man. And the it's not about missing shots. It's about not taking shots. He's 0 for 3 from the court in 20 minutes of action where he had multiple opportunities to shoot the ball, and he didn't shoot the ball. He's trying to drive by people, being overly aggressive, going to the rim. And it's like, dude, that's you're going to get to the rim when people start respecting your shot and being willing to shoot the rock. There's this one play where Jalen had an unbelievable crossover, drove the lane. I think he threw it might have been a left-handed pass out to Pritchard out on the left wing. And Pritchard immediately passed the ball to the top to Holiday, who then swung the ball to the other side. That has to be a Peyton Pritchard shot. JB yelled at him right after, and he was like, shoot the fucking ball, dude. And like, that was Pritchard throughout the game. Pritchard was scared to shoot the ball. If Peyton Pritchard's on the court, he has to let that thing go. He's in his own head right now. The shots aren't falling, so he's not shooting. That's the worst thing you can do as a shooter, is just not shoot the ball. When you're on the court, Peyton Pritchard, you have to shoot the fucking ball. And you're not gonna earn minutes on this team by being an offensive rebounder. You're gonna earn minutes on this team by running a really good pick and roll off the bench, and to make anything happen in those moments where like the ball's not in Jason Tatum's hands. How many times did Scal on the broadcast tonight say the ball just needs to be in Tatum's hands? Like, get the ball to Tatum, play off of Tatum. We're trying to run offense through Peyton Pritchard. Maybe that's a coaching issue, but Pritchard was fucking awful, man. He was terrible. He's been terrible all season. He needs to do something. The Celtics bet big on Peyton Pritchard being able to handle the role off the bench, and he's failed miserably so far this year.
Yeah, I can't argue with the shooting. He's 100% in his own head, and there definitely are shots that he needs to take. And to your point of, you know, the worst thing a guy who's out there for his shooting can do is just stop shooting so that you're not even a threat anymore is, you know, Sam Hauser was kind of a good example of a guy who kept shooting, right? And he made two big shots. I think it was later in the fourth quarter that he finally got it going and hit two of his last three shots. And I know we mentioned the one at the end of the game was kind of terrible, but that was more just confusion for a couple different reasons.
Yeah,
but
I think he thought he got fouled or something. I think he was trying to draw a foul. It was weird.
Yeah, it was a weird moment. But that aside, he hit, you know, either two out of his last three or two out of his last four because he kept shooting, right? Because he's been in, other than, you know, the Indiana game when it was a 50-point blowout, which, you know, you can get some momentum from it, but really it's hard to say that always carries over when you're playing against a guy you've never heard of that's at the end of the bench of another team. And then when you're in the moment of a crowd going nuts like it was in Minnesota tonight, and, you know, Hauser was still in there in the fourth quarter letting it fly, and he knocked him down. And so I do think that's a good example. And yeah, I can't disagree with you on the part that if Peyton's not going to shoot, it's absolutely a problem. Like I said, I'm trying to give him a little bit of credit for other stuff that he's done, but you're 1,000% right. If he's not willing to take those shots because they're going to go down. Like, I feel confident they're going to go down, but he has to be willing to take them, even if it means failing. So,
well, so the one 3-pointer he got was a wide open three in the left corner, and he missed it.
Is that the one when Holiday pushed it ahead and he was wide open?
I don't remember how he got the shot, but I remember he just had a wide open three in the left corner, and he just bricked it. And then after that, he was scared to shoot. And yeah, it's just like one of those things, you know, we're only six games into the season, but the early returns on the Peyton Pritchard experiment as the backup point guard, not great. And I think in the absence of Derek White, the last two games, we needed Peyton Pritchard to step up and show something, right? To show that he could handle this role. I mean, just think about, you mentioned TJ McConnell. TJ McConnell was fucking hooping when the Celtics played the Pacers. He was getting anywhere he wanted on the court. It's like, Peyton Pritchard, do you need just go to the TJ McConnell school of point guards? Is that like, I would rather have TJ McConnell than Peyton Pritchard right now.
At one point, very white lineup the Celtics rolled out there at one point tonight. It was an interesting move early on. Svi Mykhailiuk getting some run in there. But I do think just overall here, as we kind of move this conversation on a little bit, the bench continues to be something to keep an eye on. Like, it's got to give you a little bit more than what it's given. We saw a very brief Lamar Stevens stint today at the beginning. Some interesting calls from Joe Mazzulla. Like I said, I thought he called a pretty good game, but you know, wasn't to be this night for the Celtics. But I think quickly, Greg, we got to talk about Karl Anthony Towns, because
let's have some fun. Because Karl Anthony Towns, if he's anything, he's fun.
Here's his entire stat line today. 27 minutes, 3 of 10 from the field, 1 of 7 from 3. Had 10 rebounds, all right, give him that. 3 assists, okay. 7 turnovers, 6 fouls, and 7 points.
He's so bad, dude.
He's a joke.
I don't understand how people are always like, oh, Carl Towns. Like, I tweeted at S because I asked who's coming on our pod later this week. He was just like, man, Carl Towns just he's so skilled. He just makes things so difficult on himself. I'm like, bro, why do we keep calling Carl Anthony Towns skilled? Like, well, like, I get it. He can shoot the ball. He can deck the ball. But, like, if you just put anybody who can move their feet on him, he doesn't do shit. Like, Jrue Holiday's a world-class
defender. Enter Jrue Holiday, but even still, yeah.
Right, like, what are you doing, bro? Like, have a game plan other than shot fake, dribble to your right hand, and just try and battering ram your way to the rack. This is what he does. He fouls out of every fucking big game that he's in because he doesn't have a plan. He's so bad, dude. I don't get why anybody would trade anything of value for Carl Towns. He's not good at basketball.
100% agree. And I think it's the funniest thing is when he gets brought up as like a Knicks trade target, because I think the Knicks are totally just holding out for like,
dude, what's the difference between Carl Towns and Julius Randle? Like, one's a righty, one's a lefty.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No, like, one's a righty, one's a lefty.
No, or have seen on Twitter that like covers the Knicks that we've become like friends with. No one is into this idea, but it, like, it constantly gets around. There's like, who are the Knicks? Like, you know, it's one of those like aggregate, like clickbait type things. Like, is it Carl Towns? I was like, no, we don't want Towns. I'm like, nor should you. You have Julius Randle. There's absolutely no need for Carl Anthony Towns. But at one point tonight, my League Pass stream got messed up. So, and by the way, maybe not Bill Simmons' fault that he couldn't listen to our guy Drew.
Okay.
League Pass was fucking with me as well, and I wasn't able to watch the Celtics broadcast for part of the third quarter. So I was watching the T-Wolves when the Celtics challenged the call, the and one call for that gave, I think it was Towns' fourth or fifth foul. I can't remember. But the Timberwolves broadcast, you could hear it in their voice. They're like, he does this every time. He just hooks the guy and pushes him off. He's got to stop doing it. It was kind of funny listening to how exasperated they were with seeing Carl Anthony Towns over and over again. And it was eye popping to see just how different the T-Wolves were with Towns out there and versus like everything being centered around their, not just Anthony Edwards, but like McDaniels, Alexander Walker, Naz Reid, like all these
Kyle Anderson,
Kyle Anderson is just one of those net positive guys. Right?
It's just funny. Just like when you, let's compare Carl Towns to Kyle Anderson and just like all of the things that Carl Towns, like the skilled Carl Towns can do. It's like, yeah, but he doesn't have a brain. Like Carl Towns does not have a basketball IQ. Kyle Anderson has one of the highest basketball IQs in the league. He has the worst jump shot in the league.
Yeah.
It's so ugly. The Cornette
Porzingis played 20 feet off him. Cornette and Porzingis playing 20 feet away from him.
But like, they're better with Kyle Anderson on the court. They're better with Naz Reid filling in and like running their lineup of Conley, Edwards, Gobert, McDaniels, and take your pick of anybody except Carl Towns. It's just a better lineup. I don't get. Like, I know Minnesota, they paid him a lot of money. They have to try and make it work. Yeah. But, like, they gotta figure this out because it's not going to be – they're not – they have a really high ceiling because Gobert looks great. And, like, I don't – you know me. I'm not a big Paul George guy. I'm not a big Rudy Gobert guy. I've been impressed with both of them so far this season. Carl Towns just, like, doesn't really deserve to be on the court, man. Like, did he do anything?
No, I mean, I just read you the stat line. He did not do much tonight. He did not do anything. If anything, he hurt.
What's he like? I know this is. I've only watched him one game this season, but like, this is what I see every time I tune into a Carl Towns game. I see this. So like, what has he done? He's averaging 18.6. This is before tonight's game. 18.6, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, field goal. He's shooting. So let me read you. Oh, they actually have the game tonight. So his last five games, 30% from the field, 50% from the field, 37% from the field, 41% from the field, 41% from the field. From the three-point line, 14%, 33%, 25%, 33%, 25%. Turnovers, he actually hasn't been that bad with turnovers. So this was probably like the Nadir.
He's like a catch and shoot guy. He doesn't handle the ball that much.
it's bad. If I'm a T-Wolves fan, I'm just like praying that Carl Towns gets traded.
That there's some team out there that wants
who wants Carl Towns right now? Honestly, like,
I mean, honestly, there are teams. Let's
who?
Be real.
Let's go through it. Teams. Who actually wants him?
The Hornets would talk themselves into Carl Towns in a second.
Why?
Because they're the Hornets, dude. Like,
I'd rather have Mark Williams.
I like Mark Williams as well, too. But there are teams that just for, because listen, like, he does have talent. There are lower tier teams in the league that would easily talk themselves in. I'm not saying that it's the right move, but there's definitely lower tier teams that for the right offer would talk themselves into Karl Towns. It more depends, I think, on the Timberwolves being like, okay, are we going to take that offer, or what, or how much can they play this out to get something better of value in return for Towns?
Right. And I understand that there's probably a GM dumb enough to trade for Karl Towns, but like, just me and you talking,
yeah,
does he improve any team that he gets traded to? Like, honestly, I don't think he does. It's like the way that he plays basketball, I just like don't like watching him play basketball. I disagree with most of the decisions that he makes on the court.
That's a big barometer for me and you when we watch basketball. It's just like, do I agree with the decisions that this person makes? It's a very different player, but it's my Precious Achiuwa take. Like, I get why people like Precious Achiuwa. I generally disagree when I watch yeah. him play. I generally disagree with almost every decision he makes. So,
and like I get that it's not the best pairing. Him and Gobert was never going to be the best pairing. But even before Gobert got there and they had that fun team, like, most of the decisions he was making in the playoffs, I was just like, dude, Karl Towns, what are you doing? You're in foul trouble. Why are you battering ram in your way to the hoop and just like throwing your arm off? Like, you're not supposed to do this in this moment, bro. Like, what are you doing crashing the offensive glass and slamming into somebody like a running back who like is trying to force his way through the hole? It's like, what are you doing, Karl Towns? I don't get it. And like, I get that he's skilled. I get that he can shoot the three, and like, he can put the ball on the floor and dribble a couple of times, and he can make the occasional pass. He sucks on defense. He can't move his feet. He's always fouling people, like the foul he had on Jason Tatum. Bro, like, yeah, you moved your feet initially well. Tatum had to shoot a tough fadeaway, but then you reached in with five fucking fouls and you hit him on the elbow and then complained to the referee and were saying, like, oh, you almost ripped your shorts off on the court. You fouled him, dude, because you're not a smart basketball player. And I feel bad because, like, I'm normally not this fired up about someone that, like, I don't really care about. Like, Karl Towns, he's on my team. I don't really care. But I like, want the Wolves to be good. I, like, want Anthony Edwards to have a good team around him because I like Ant Edwards. And Karl Towns just sucks.
I was letting you go on this one, man. You're into this one. So I was just letting you go with it. But, you know, Karl Anthony Towns out here revolutionizing basketball, you know? It's just what he does. Just what he does. A couple quick hitters here, and then we're gonna sign off out of here. Rob Williams news, man. Potentially season-ending knee surgery. They haven't set an official timeline. It doesn't look good.
Hold on.
We got something here.
I just want to hold on. How do I get that back up there? Look at this. Look at this quote from Karl Towns. I'll do whatever it takes to win. That's kind of.
Hey, do you need me to foul out and make really bad decisions to win? You got it. I'm your guy right here. Perfect quote from Karl Anthony Towns here. But yeah, Rob Williams, potential season-ending knee surgery. Just quick thought on that. It's just tough to see because, you know, Rob's
is it potential season-ending?
They say it could be surgery 2 to 3 months. They haven't announced the official timeline, but man. Plus rehab, whatever. Like, it doesn't look
good.
That
sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks. I just want Rob to, I just don't think he's going to be able to stay healthy, man. The way that he jumps and the way that he lands, it always looks like he's not landing softly. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we always talked about, like, is he hurt? Every time he would land, it looked like he hurt himself.
And he would have like this, like, almost gimp in his run when he was going.
Did you see the play? How did he hurt himself?
I actually haven't. I saw, I forget, I was doing something today and I saw that he left the game early with an injury. I think it was last night or 2 nights
ago. Yeah, because I was looking at the box score. I was like, oh, he played 11 minutes and Ayton played 35. I was like, did Ayton play well? And I looked at Ayton's stat line. He didn't play well. And I was like, ah, shit.
Yeah, so I had seen that something happened. And then, like, I think early, right before the game today, I saw the, I don't know if it was Woj or Shams that had it, that he was going to need surgery. And I saw a 2 to 3 month timeline, or I think they're still exploring options of what it is, but either way, it just doesn't sound very good. So sad to hear for our guy Rob. Was just hoping up, that man. He could hook on with a playoff team and make a difference. But, you know, this is kind of speaks to why the Celtics were willing to make a move, you know, when a guy like Holiday comes available. And not to say you couldn't predict this would happen with the Celtics, but just have the history. It's a different knee, but just seems to be, like you said, something that happens to this guy. So it's unfortunate. But another thing I wanted
about, oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Should I go or you go?
I want to see. All right, I'll go, but I want to. You tell me if you're going to say the same thing, dude. Grant Williams is fucking balling.
I wasn't going to go there, but yes, Grant Williams. I don't know what it is as of. They had a game tonight, so I don't know what. But I saw earlier today. Field goal percentage on the season, 55%. 3-point percentage, 56%.
What the hell is Joe Mazzulla doing
for Grant Williams?
What was he doing? Grant deserved to be on. We were shouting about it like every game. Like, put Grant in the fucking game, and he just never played, man. It killed me. Now he's,
this podcast was big time Grant Williams. You know, we've talked about it in the last couple. Mavericks with another win tonight, 15-point win over the Magic. Apparently this, I was telling this to Adam the other day, or maybe when we were talking to Drew, just stop pretending like preseason means anything. I read way too much into the preseason Mavs and how bad they were. And I should have just realized that, listen, once Luka gets to be Luka, and like I don't know that 5-1 is going to project them to all of a sudden be a top three seed, but they're going to get to 45, 46, 47, maybe 48 wins just with Luka being healthy. Like, Luka being healthy, the right guys spacing, the right guys on defense. Lively seems to be like an actual pretty good draft pick. So, Yeah, the Magic, who we both really like. So, Mavericks keep on rolling. Just looking around the league here quickly. Indiana, 152-111 over the Spurs. Just an absolute beatdown.
Yeah, Spurs on a back-to-back, traveling to Indiana after playing a home game. That's a tough one for them.
Yeah.
The James Harden experiment, the system.
Off to a bad start.
Malfunctioning system thus far.
The Knicks broke the code.
James Harden's a better player than Karl Towns, but it's just like, if you're going to bring James Harden in, like, understand that your chemistry is probably going to get fucked up for a little bit. And I thought the Clippers, they had nice chemistry so far this year. And like,
I totally agree. I'm worried about how that's, I mean,
Paul George, 2-for-11 tonight, man. Paul George was out here hooping the first five games of the season. And now James Harden comes into the mix and probably seemingly looks like
one game in, you're back on the Paul George hate train. Just cause
Not even. I'm mad that James Harden is fucking up Paul George. Cause I like Paul George. I just I think he's overrated, but there are times where I'm like, ooh, like I mean, he's got a beautiful game. It's just like people talk about him like he's on the same level as like the LeBrons of the world, and it's like, no, he's not that good, man.
All right. One last thing I wanted to talk with you about, just because we haven't talked about this at all on the podcast, and now we're technically in the midst of it, even though the Celtics haven't tipped off yet. But the NBA in-season tournament is here. It was a thing last Friday, and I saw that you had some thoughts about it today. I don't know who it was or what it was that sparked you to go off against the anti.
All the old heads, man. It's people I like.
So what was it that triggered you? Because I saw this today, and I was like, ooh, I want to bring this up because I'm actually going to be at the first ever in-season tournament game for the Celtics this Friday. Come holler at your boy. I'll be in the building there for the Nets and Celtics. Maybe the first ever game without the parquet floor on the Celtics home court. Yeah. I think it might be, but I saw that you were triggered. So tell me more about what your thoughts were on the in-season tournament and what you didn't like hearing from some of the old heads.
Well, people are just like, well, why would I ever tune into this thing? Like, what's the point of watching this game? It's like, dude, it's like, do you understand what it is? It's just, they're trying to make the regular season like more enjoyable and to give people more reason to tune in. So like, are you tuning in to a normal Friday night game of like pick two random teams? No, you're probably not going to watch that. But like the average fan, when they tune in and they're like, oh, why does the court look like this? Oh, they're doing this in-season tournament. So like anytime you see the court, because the courts have been a big thing of discussion, it's like that just
means... Anytime you see a court that blinds you as you're flipping channels, you know it's the in-season tournament, baby. Right.
But it's like, they need to like make it so clear that this is different from what you're normally watching. So it had to stand out, right? So like, I think that actually makes sense. But then like, if you grew up playing basketball, tournaments were a huge part of your existence as a basketball player. You went to tournaments all the time, from middle school to AAU to high school to college. Like, think about how prevalent college tournaments are, not just the NCAA tournament, but they have like the classic to like the Hawaii classic that they do at the beginning of the year. Yeah, there's always these tournaments throughout the year that help like draw interest. People are going to tune in. It puts a different competitive environment. Just naturally, you're playing to win a tournament. So even like you're going to try harder to win the tournament than you would try harder to just win a normal regular season game. It's just human nature that you're going to compete just a little bit more. Like any tournament I ever competed in, I was always like, oh, I want to win this tournament because I'm a competitor. You know what I mean? And I think when players get there, they're going to those instincts are going to naturally kick in more than just a typical regular season game. And I think it's a cool idea, man. And like what the fuck? Like, do you really love the regular season that much that you're just like, I don't want this tournament. I just love my 82 game regular season. Like, yeah, why?
There's no down, because it is part
there's
of
no the downside.
The thing is, it's part of the 82 game, so there is no downside other than that one championship game that's not part of it. It's just regular season games rebranded. So, you know, as someone who, I will be honest, my first inclination is to typically hate on something initially. That's just, doesn't mean that's always how I feel, but that's usually my first inclination is, why the fuck are they doing this? This is stupid. Like, that was probably my original thought. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, what? Like, this, I think the courts are grotesque. I think they're disgusting. But I also think that they're also so bad that I'm now into it. Like, I think I tweeted this, it's almost like a bad movie that I'm going to see specifically because I know it's bad, but I'm going to take an edible before to enjoy like how bad it is.
Will you be on edibles at the Celtics game?
No. I can't actually watch sports if I'm really trying to enjoy it and take edibles. That's not how I mix those two for me. But it can make you feel like it if you saw that Bulls red court where you think the whole, you know, there's blood everywhere, or the ones for the Pacers where it looked like they were like swimming in a CGI pool. It was so blue. Like, the courts are really weird. But to your point, like, I do think it, number one, it's got people talking about the in-season tournament, because otherwise they just had the regular courts. How do you know? I think they could have done it, and I think they'll make some tweaks. And I think ultimately the biggest thing for me is everything that you just said about how you as a competitor would react to this. You know, NBA players are a whole different breed, because then you got the whole money and everything that comes into it. But I think ultimately if the players end up taking it seriously and they end up caring, that's all the fans need to care more. Like, I don't think the branding at the end of the day, like, I think it's going to help just to bring awareness in this first year, second year. But if you get into, you know, the, you know, East Group A final pool games, and you see, you know, Tatum diving on the floor for a ball because they're 3-1 or 2-1, they need this game to get to the quarterfinals, and the players, you know, and you see that the players have like a little extra juice, which would be a great thing for especially the beginning of the NBA season, which until, you know, NFL ends, a lot of people are kind of like, I don't know, wake me up when Super Bowl's over. You know, this does give it that extra juice. And as long as the players buy in, the fans will buy in if the players buy in. That's the way I feel. Like, I just don't feel like, you know, it's going to matter unless the players buy in, which I don't see really why they wouldn't, because they still would want to win a regular season game. And exactly. Then maybe if it gets to be a quarterfinal, semifinal game, and it's like, you know what? I wouldn't have dove on the floor for that last loose ball last year in late November, early December, if it was the 17th game of the year and didn't mean as much. But if I dive on the floor and get that ball, I might get 500K. Like, all right, I'll dive for that ball.
Right. And also, I think another part of it, besides what you're talking about, is like just the reps that some teams are going to get, whether it's a contending team that hasn't made it over the hump, or it's a young team that needs to get to another level, like, and potentially get some reps for the playoffs. Like, imagine the Celtics. I don't know if it's possible. I don't know how the brackets work. But, like, imagine if
this is the other part that makes it kind of funny is nobody knows how it works. Nobody can name the groups. Like, until we get to, like, actually maybe, like, the last pool game, no one's going to understand how this thing works.
Right. But imagine the Celtics end up playing the Heat, right? Yeah. And, like, the Heat are like, you know what? We're coming out here and we're going to still show you that we're the badasses. We're the big bad wolf on the block. And if the Celtics can vanquish the Heat in a one-off scenario, I truly think that will give them confidence, right? If the Heat beat the Celtics, I think the Celtics are going to feel pretty shitty about themselves that they couldn't beat the Heat in a game that mattered. You know what I mean? Like, those types of things I think are important for, let's just pick a team out there that needs to, like the fucking Clippers. The Clippers... Mm-hmm. They haven't won shit in their franchise history. The Pacers. Dude,
if the Clippers win this thing, you know how they're everyone just keeps talking about they keep making all these moves because they got no draft picks and they're opening up their building next year. If they win the in-season tournament, they're going to put a billboard, banners. They're going to build their entire reputation going into this new solo building away from the Lakers as you got to come check out the NBA in-season tournament champions. Right. That's going to be their whole MO going into that new building.
But let's think about the teams that like it would really be cool for them to win the in-season tournament that like actually have a chance. Like the fucking Wizards aren't going to win it, right? But like the Sixers, they need reps winning big games. Joel Embiid needs to show that he can fucking play in a big game because he's been terrible in the playoffs. If the Sixers somehow win this, I think that's a pretty big deal for the Sixers. I think that's a step in the right direction for them as a franchise, being able to win something. The Mavericks.
My only pushback to this, in this, I think what you're saying is what I hope this is 100% true in 2 to 3 years. But once again, I think this all just depends on the players, because you had a quote from like Jimmy Butler like a week ago where he was like, I don't really care until it's the, you know, NBA.
Yeah, but
like,
it's not the playoffs. So hard, dude. Jimmy Butler.
Right. I'm just using that as an example. I agree with you that that's going to be some shit Jimmy says, especially, you know, at the beginning of the season, they're 1-4. Well, they just won tonight. I think they're 3-4 now. But, you know, my point being, I think they're
to counter that, Jimmy Butler's been to the finals 2 of the last 3 years or whatever it is, like 3 of the last 4 years. The Sixers have not. The Sixers have never, like, under this. When was the last time the Sixers were in the fucking finals? Like, in the 70s?
I'm with you. Well, 01 with the Iverson team.
Oh, but, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
But the counterpoint to that is like, this is for me. My biggest thing is just like the players are going to determine if this thing matters or not.
Right.
And if the, you know, let's fast forward 3 years, just play along with this hypothetical. Sixers win it this year, and 3 years from now they have to go ahead and trade Joel Embiid. They've still never gotten out of the second round. Like, is winning the in-season tournament just gonna kind of be scoffed at? We're like, okay, cool, you guys won the in-season tournament, you know what I mean? And like, so right. And you can't know that now, of course, like it's gonna have to play out. But that's for me where like if all the biggest players are showing up and they're actually putting everything into it as if this is more. And you can tell in games when it feels like it's more than just a regular season game. We say this all the time. Like, that had a playoff feel to it, right? There are regular season games that this happens in. So if that happens in this tournament, I think what you're saying about these big game reps will be true. I'm a little skeptical on that point. I want it to be true. I'm skeptical on that being the case right now.
Here's my thing. You started this whole conversation saying that normally you're a hater at first. And like the way that you're talking about it, I can feel that like haterade. Like, you've been drinking the haterade.
There is a realism to it. Like, there's not every team sitting out there going, dude, this in-season tournament is so great for our big game reps. Like, I just think that's a little bit of a jump that like for what it wants to be. Yes, that is absolutely the goal. For what it is, I'm a little skeptical that it is going to be that. I'm willing to find out. Like, let's go find out. I think there's no harm in trying to find out. I just don't know that that's what it is right now.
Yeah, but all the dude, like, I don't understand people like you and like all these other people that are like, they're like, oh,
I'm in that group of other people. I love it.
Oh, it drives me fucking insane because you guys are like, oh, it doesn't matter. It's the first year of doing something. Like, why the fuck does anybody care? There's always the first year of some shit that's new.
Yeah,
that's how new shit works, bro. Like, the 3-point line. I bet if you went back and read all the articles from the fucking 3-point line when it came out, that everybody was freaking the fuck out about it. You know what I mean? Like, eventually,
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, so like,
no, I get it.
When you're in the first year of something, it's gonna take some time for like you're saying, and I'm not disagreeing with everything you're saying, for it to actually matter, and it will 100% depend on the players. My main point is, if you put competitive people in a competitive environment, they're naturally going to compete and compete hard. You saw the Celtics versus the Wolves tonight. Like, they were trying their fucking ass off. Imagine if this, okay, I didn't get to finish my exercise, but imagine the Timberwolves win this in-season tournament. You're not going to tell me that's huge for Anthony Edwards and like Carl Towns is in the world.
Carl Towns, in-season so tournament, excited. Four-time All-Star, in-season tournament MVP, Carl Anthony Towns. The T-Wolves would
be so excited to win the in-season tournament. The fucking Knicks. The Knicks would be excited, even though they wouldn't want to admit it. They would be excited to win the in-season tournament. The Hawks could really use an in-season tournament victory. The Thunder, you know, all the young teams, that would be cool. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of like other teams, like the late. It doesn't matter to the like this.
I think regardless of
Celtics and Lakers, like maybe the Celtics because we haven't won a title with this group. No, the Lakers have won.
Dude, I think there's any team that you could spin this as a massive positive for. I think there's every single team where you can say like the Lakers, they think we're done. Watch, we're gonna win the in-season tournament, and then that's gonna propel us, and we're gonna win the whole thing. You know, we're gonna go on Celtics. We won the in-season tournament, like. I'm sure, like you said, as this develops, this could become like this is, and this is the part of the goal of the NBA is like, I know in international soccer, there's like a name for it. If you win like all three of, if you win like the league and the two FA Cup,
or it's not the triple crown, but something like that.
It's something like that. Like there's going to be something like that. It's the double cup or something. I don't know that you win with this. So like, I think there's absolutely a case to be made. And like I said, I'm in for this experiment. Like, let's see what happens. I'm all in for the experiment. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't think it's necessarily destined to fail either. I just think it's kind of like, let's wait and see. Let's play it out. Let's have some fun. Let's make fun of these dumbass courts and these horrible jerseys. And
yeah,
at the end of the day, we'll get a couple teams in Vegas in a neutral site that we've never get to see. And maybe it goes well. Maybe it's dumb. Who knows? We'll find out in 3 years what the answer is.
Hey, you're a realistic pessimist and I'm a black sheep optimist, baby.
Hey, and with that, I think that's the perfect way to go ahead and wrap what turned into a unexpectedly lengthy episode that we meant to do a very quick hit here, but we got going today. It was a fun one. Despite the Celtics taking their first loss, this was a fun one. We got a busy week coming up here for the Celtics. Just a quick look ahead at their schedule here. Wednesday night, the Philadelphia 76ers at Philly. And then as we mentioned, Brooklyn. The first play-in tournament game, your boy will be in attendance, followed by the Raptors the next night at home, and then the Knicks on Monday night. So a big week coming up ahead for the Boston Celtics to get back on track here. 5-1 is the record. Greg, you're a black sheep optimist. Give us any final thoughts, and then let us know what we're going to hear on the way out. For those of you listening.
No final thoughts. I'll just put get this high. Black sheep optimist. I was going to put like an unreleased thing, but get this high. Black sheep optimist.
Maybe next time. Too bad. Peace out. Every time I get this high, I lose my mind. It don't take much no more until I hit the floor. Every time I get this high, it's you I find. It don't take much no more until I'm at your door. You cut me to my core, baby. What can I say? You got me on the floor, you know I came to play. I know I shouldn't, but you seem to take my pain away. And every time I score, Jason Tatum fade away. I close my eyes and I'm floating in your river.